We are Missouri Farm Bureau Insurance, and we're for the people of Missouri. We're for brewmasters, stockbrokers, beauty queens, and truck drivers. Whatever you do, if you're a Missourian, we're for you. We are Missouri Farm Bureau Insurance, and we've got Missouri covered.
Covers the Chiefs.
With that, time's yours.
And you're in that place where you're in the playoffs.
He covers the Royals.
Flair, over there in the middle on the left.
Salvador, just take us through your emotions.
He covers college sports.
But one great thing about the conference tournament, where I think it gives teams hope.
And every now and then, he likes a good laugh.
Make them laugh, make them laugh. Don't you know everyone wants to laugh?
He's Blair Kirkhoff of the Kansas City Star on the program.
Yes, indeed. Blair Kirkhoff, brought to you by our friends at the University of Kansas Health System. Did you know you can walk in and see the same experts that care for the Royals and Chiefs? Not even an appointment necessary. 435 and all, that's where you can find them. Basically, diagonal to where the Top Golf is over there, 435 and all. That's where you can walk right in. My buddy Joe Spiker and his wife, unfortunately, she had a broken bone in her foot. They weren't sure what it was. They found out about a half hour what it was because they walked right in to the University of Kansas Health System right there at 435. And all. No appointment necessary, whether it's a break, a strain, a sprain. Ages 5 and up, 8A to 7P, you can walk right in at 435 and all. Why wouldn't you go today? If you've got that knee that's been barking at you, the ankle, or like I said, drop something on the foot, not sure if it's broken, you can find out quickly right there at the University of Kansas Health System, 435 and all. We're headed into football season. I know football practice is going to be firing up, and you got the kids playing football, and you need an answer quick. You can get it right now at the University of Kansas Health System. Mr. Kirkhoff, sir, how is St. Joe?
St. Joe is same as it's always been. It's funny. When I drove up for the first time, was it last week when the rookies and quarterbacks reported? It was just all so familiar. You just knew where to go and
sure.
Everything is so familiar up here now. And I know as long as Andy Reid's the coach, it'll always be here. And we got to, if you're not used to that idea, we should get used to that idea.
They do have a little bit of news today, and they've finally made it official, something that started to come out yesterday evening, and that is that Carlos Dunlap has been added to the defensive line. What's your reaction to this deal getting done?
Yeah, I just thought something like this would happen earlier, but here it is. It's it finally moves Orlando Brown out of the headlines. Stop talking about him and what's going to happen with him, and now we get to talk about an acquisition that we thought would happen in some shape or form, right? So they were going to pick up somebody on the defensive line. Coming out of last season, we all were kind of ticked off about the way the offense played in the second half of the AFC Championship game. But the pass rush was pretty abysmal in that game, and the only thing the Chiefs did to address it was Karlaftis, which everybody seems to like, and he's. He's looked okay up here. It's only been a couple of days for me seeing him, but I thought there was another big move in the offing, and finally it happened. So, started with not signing Melvin Ingram, and then Quinn would look like somebody they could hone in on, and even a fleeting thought when D Ford was announced he was going to no longer be with the 49ers, maybe he was the guy, but no, it's Carlos Dunlap, and I like his numbers. I like what he did last year. He only played like 38% of the defensive snaps and still ended up with 8.5 sacks. So I like what he did. I like this. It'll be interesting to see him in his number 8 uniform here pretty soon.
Yeah, that's one of the things that, still we were talking about with Seth Kizer yesterday, the 24 on Ingram always messed with me. I'm like, why? God, that's a giant DB. Oh, wait a minute, that's Melvin Ingram. Now if he's out there wearing a single digit, it'll be like, look at the size of that quarterback. Oh yeah, wait a minute. That is one of the things that messes with you. But my reaction to this is just how well the Chiefs are playing the personnel game these days. And it's about winning a championship. I mean, I'm not trying to induct Brett Veach into the Hall of Fame, you know, just yet. But I really think that they have. We've watched him be, because there was a lot of questions like, oh, he, you know, he came up under Andy Reid. Is this guy really qualified for it? Is he just going to be a yes man for Andy Reid? And I think the guy's really proven that he can, you know, run the organization. And is Andy Reid a factor in all this? Of course he is. Absolutely. And you want him to be a factor in it. But I think he's proven that he can, one, go for it when it's like, we haven't been to a Super Bowl in 50 years. We got to make this happen. And go out and pour everything you have in your cap and maybe even mortgage a little bit of the future to get it done, right? Build the team around him. Make sure you maximize what Patrick Mahomes is. Give him all his weapons. They did that. Then they win a championship, and it's like, hey, we think the window's open. You know, even though I would have started playing for the long game there, but they were like, the window's open, and we're going to get everything out of it as we can. And so for the next 2 years, they put everything they can into being absolutely everything that that core can be. And now we see them turn the page, walk on Tyreek Hill, get great value for him, and then sit and be patient. I was told that the conversations have been going on since the spring with Dunlap, and that they kind of had their number. And Dunlap, you know, well, let me see if I can get more, is out there shopping around. And the Chiefs didn't go, okay, well, here's more. Well, here's a second year. You know, they just stayed. They waited. They managed their cap, so they still had the cap room to make this happen right now. And then when the opportunity was there, they seized it. I think that's, you know, an underrated part of what this organization is doing is how well they're playing the personnel game these days.
Yeah, and did it with, you know, with moving some of Travis Kelce's money, you know, into this year. They still had the cap space to do what they did today.
Yeah.
With Dunlap. No, I'm with you on this. I think you manage an NFL team differently when you have a generational quarterback. You know, there's, you know, as long as you've got a quarterback who you think can get you to the playoffs every year, and that's where the Chiefs are right now, then, you know, there are some years you're going to be, you know, stronger than – you'll be stronger, you know, from – your 53 will be stronger than others in some years. But they'll never – you know, you never think of the Chiefs now as being a team that can be below 500 or out of the playoffs. Maybe that'll happen. It certainly happened to the Packers in the Aaron Rodgers era. Never happened to Brady, though, out of the playoffs just one time, you know, once they started going in New England. But it just seems like you can do some things with your roster and make some moves for the future to keep that window open when you have the quarterback. And that's what the Chiefs are doing right now. And I was getting a little worried about the defensive end position. Were they going to get somebody? Here they do have him. And I'm looking forward to it. He's 33. So there is that, but Ingram was up in age too when he played for the Chiefs last year, and now with the Dolphins. So I'm bullish. They got better today with this signing, and this was already going to be a good team.
Yeah, I agree. And how about the fact that, you know, I never understood the fascination with Melvin Ingram and why everyone, well, we're going to get Melvin Ingram signed. I'm like, listen, I liked the signing last year. And, you know, when it was, you know, mid-season or the trade, I guess, to go get him and solidify that spot, I think it was a great move. But this idea that, like, I was like, what do you people think they're letting walk? Like, if he's not going to play for the number you're offering him, why are you – he had one sack. I mean, settle down, people. This guy, as you mentioned, you know, they used him well, and I think that's one of the things. Like, I think he's going to be somewhat of a situational pass rusher. He's not going to play every down, but it might be that Karloftis plays the early downs, and then he plays the obvious passing downs, and that might be the switch there. But, you know, he had 8.5 sacks, and I get it, and I go round and round with Eager about this. Pressures are more important than sacks. Well, I get it, because you got to pressure. You know, you're getting pressure before you actually sack him. The sack is like the next level. But it's important to bring the man down, to hit the quarterback, to knock the quarterback around. And sacks are a definitive. He's going down to the ground. And this guy does it. And so when everybody – I think, aren't we at a point now that when the Chiefs don't sign Melvin Ingram, everybody ought to at least give him the benefit of the doubt to begin with that, well, that's probably the right decision. You know, and maybe they've got something else. Because you know what? This worked out just fine for them.
Well, you'll have to remind me, because I just can't remember a move that Brett Veach has made in his time as GM where I just thought, well, what, that was ridiculous. You know, what a silly move. Or that's never going to pan out. I haven't seen it yet. And I think he deserves a lot of credit for this. The other thing, and this is something that I don't – remember seeing, you know, Seahawk games last year and, you know, and just watching Dunlap play or being able to focus on him. But he had 7 of his 8.5 sacks in a 4-game stretch. He had 3 in one game and then 2 in 2 other games and then a game where he didn't have a sack. And those were late in the season, like the last 4 games of the year for a team that didn't get to the playoffs. So I don't know if that means anything or not. Maybe it means he was playing his best football at the end of a 17-game schedule, and which might be encouraging. But I just thought it was interesting that he had most of his sacks over a 4-game stretch.
Yeah, I think it shows that obviously the tank wasn't on empty when he's right. playing his best ball at the end. To your point about the mistake that Brett Veach made, you know, I think what's amazing is probably his worst decision has been one that you can't deny. If they don't make it, I don't know that they win the Super Bowl. And that was the trade and contract for Frank Clark. I mean, like that in and of itself, what they gave up for him and what he has produced and the cap that he has taken, Frank Clark has not lived up to that contract. But when they got him, what they needed was, remember, they moved Dee Ford for a second-round pick who is now already looking for work, right? The Niners yep. quickly went, oh, yeah, this didn't really work. They added to their picks that they had to do something with. And he used that, you know, used that ammunition to go get Frank Clark. And Frank Clark had, like, what did he have in the 4 playoff games? He had, like, 4.5, 5 sacks, you know, coming down the stretch. Like
In the Chiefs playoff history, he's like in their top 5 in career sacks and playoff games. You know, when you string the 2 Super Bowl seasons together. So yes, he has absolutely been a disappointment in the regular season. But those 2 postseasons, especially the first one, I don't know. I look at it like Johnny Cueto. Johnny Cueto.
Yeah, exactly. The Royals, you know? Yes. Yes, that's a great way. And I'll go even a step further, Blair. Sorry to step on you. But I'll go a step further because, you know, I think like the Baltimore Ravens right now to me are an interesting – the Ravens and the Colts are 2 teams that I think do a lot of things right, right? But they haven't won a championship with their current makeup. I know the Ravens did back with Joe Flacco, right? And the Colts obviously did back with Peyton Manning. But right now, this group, right, the people that are calling the shots, this group and this group of players, they haven't won. And I think there's something to be said for – and listen, I'm going to tell you, when I talk to people in the analytics world, they will not say that the Chiefs are in the, you know, the top so many of the analytics. Like, I am a little bit worried that the Chiefs don't get a little bit more analytically inclined with how they do things. But the one thing I think they do get is, you know, there are times that you got to push your chips into the table. There are times you got to go beyond what is the smart move. I think when you make the smart move, you're living in that 10-6 world. Like, well, we can't go with that big a contract because that there's a lot of risk. If that guy doesn't play, boy, we fall. You know, it's an inefficient move and it costs us a lot. And I think what the Chiefs get is, like, was the Orlando Brown move great? No. But it was at a premium position, right? The Colts have all these good offensive linemen, but none of them play left tackle, which is the most important position on the offensive line. The Colts have all these really good players, but none of them's a blanket on defense, but none of them's a blanket cover corner guy or an edge rusher that roars off the edge and gets 15 sacks. They don't have those guys. They do all these really efficient things that make them a really good roster, but also with no ceiling. Like the Chiefs get left tackle. It's important to have a good left tackle. That's more important than having, you know, being great at guard to guard. And so they made sure that they had that. Then they went out, by the way, and ended up making themselves great guard to guard. But they understood, we've got to get it. Yes, Orlando Brown is not perfect, but we need a real left tackle. And that's something that Andy Reid has done. I mean, I think that's Brett Veach carrying out Andy Reid's marching orders in a lot of ways, to be with you, because when he came to town, what did he do? They drafted Eric Fisher the first year, got a left tackle, and then soon after that, they got Mitchell Schwartz in free agency. They made it super easy and super quick to be able to, you know, make sure we've got those tackle spots filled up. You know, I think they've always done a really good job of going beyond just what is the safety of the analytics, the safety of the numbers, and recognizing at certain times you got to go beyond what is the most recommended decision. And they fill the spots that are the important ones, and I think they make decisions that are tough to you know, that other teams wouldn't do, that aren't the safest move, but they're the ones that, that create a championship roster. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does. And one of those risk, you know, potential risky moves this year is on the defensive side. Look how many, you know, look how many rookies could end up starting for the Chiefs, you know, this year. I mean, if it's, you know, Karlaftis is going to be part of the rotation. You know, Joshua Williams, who, you know, was on a division, came out of a Division II program that didn't even have a football season in the COVID year, is getting strong looks here and has played well and had a nice, really nice pass breakup today on a Mahomes to Kelsey attempt. You know, Brian Cook, you know, just they could start, you know, a handful of rookies up here, and that's, you know, you would think for a you know, for a contending team, that's what a rebuilding team would do, not a contending team. But I you know, they're giving them giving these rookies Justin Reed said yesterday, a heavy playbook, and expecting them to, you know, to succeed here. I think that's also kind of a risk, and certainly a storyline to keep an eye on is, you know, just how many, you know, how many new faces are on this defense, and how many of those guys are first year players. I think that the Chiefs have had rookie starters. We know that every year that I've been coming up here and you've been watching them, they've had rookie starters and guys have, you know, that have contributed right out of the gate. But I don't know if there've ever been this many on one unit at a time. And I'm going to be really eager to see how these guys develop.
Well, and that is the thing. Can Steve Spagnuolo create a defense that young players can shine in, because they have to have them this year?
Yep, McDuffie's the other one. I'd forgotten, you know, their first pick. So that is the question. And it's funny, he addressed that today. I don't know if you played his sound yet, but you know, he talked about it today. Almost got a little animated, you know, with questioning about, you know, a complicated defense being fed to, you know rookie players. And you know, I liked his answer. He said they want to give him a ton of stuff and maybe take stuff away as the season unfolds. But give him everything, and let's see if they can handle it. We'll see if that's the right direction.
Yeah, I think one of the things that will help with that, where he might look a lot better, is I think you have to make things complicated and disguise things and do all that when you don't have the athletes. Right. When you have the athletes and you can say, like, well, you know, Derek Thomas beats this guy off the edge. We don't need to twist and blitz and, you know, drop the D end. And like when you have guys that can beat people. So I'm curious, you know, then you can just let them do their thing. And if I think the Chiefs have definitely upgraded the athleticism on defense. I think they've definitely upgraded the physicality on defense. And I think that it could be that, you know, he can gear down a little bit some of the complexities of it, because he's got guys that can now just go beat somebody.
Yep. I think that's right. And not something that, you know, we've seen before. Look, I think not maybe to this extent. They're going to miss Charvarius Ward, and Rashad Fenton's still not practicing, right? I don't know when he's going to be back. So, and that's part of the reason why the Fenton injury is part of the reason why we may be looking at such a young, you know, secondary this year. But it's, you know, the guys that have been out with the ones in the 7-on-7 and 11-on-11s, it is a young and a group with you know, in addition to Justin Reed. And, you know, I think that adds to the responsibility of guys like Nick Bolton and Willie Gay and Nadi and Jones and Frank Clark, and you really need to step up. So, you're looking at the guys who you know, proven themselves in a Chiefs uniform to be at their best, because they're having, you know, it's really going to be a new look Chiefs defense in terms of personnel. And you were talking about uniform numbers. I was telling somebody up here, it's just so difficult for me to see, you know, guys who I'm so familiar with having worn these uniform numbers for years for the Chiefs and not in them, right? You know, that's really true on defense. The one that gets me every time now is Pacheco, the running back, who's wearing number 10. And, you know, how was that not Tyreek Hill? And
right.
I thought Marcus Peters was still with the team 3 years after he was gone, because I just got used to that number 22 all the time. But with this new defense, get used to seeing, you know, new bodies and old uniforms, because that's what it's going to be.
We're talking to Blair Kirkhoff here in the program, as he is brought to you by our friends at Twin Peaks. If you're looking for the ultimate place to go check out a game, eats, drinks, scenic views, got it all right there at Twin Peaks. Premium cocktails, 29-degree man-sized draft beer. You can get it right now at Twin Peaks. Great spot to watch your Royals baseball very soon. Going to be a great spot to be watching football as well. Made from scratch menu. Great lineup of premium cocktails, and like I said, 29-degree man-sized draft beers. What are you waiting for? Get over to Twin Peaks today. You can find them online at twinpeaksrestaurant.com or with Blair Kirkhoff. When we come back, we'll get into some of the college football news here of late with Blair. Blair Kirkhoff up in training camp with the Kansas City Chiefs. Maybe get his thoughts on the Royals trade as well. We do it live at Hen House, 119th and Row. That's where we are. Come down and get the best beef anywhere around. I'm talking about certified Hereford beef. It's sold exclusively at your Hen House markets.
All right, the Joe's Kansas City Barbecue burnt end of the hour answer. These two franchises are the only two to each have a perfect game against the other. Who are they?
Each to have a perfect game? Oh, geez, I have no idea. None. It's Yankees and Reds. No, that's dumb. Yankees and Orioles.
It is the Angels and Rangers. Kenny Rogers threw his for the Rangers against the Angels on this date in 1995. The other is Mike Witt, who for the Angels threw a perfect game against the Rangers on the final day of the 1984 season.
Mike Witt. God, Mike Witt has a perfect game. Those aren't the names that are supposed to have perfect games, are they?
not generally.
Angels and Rangers. You know, forever linked, Blair. They're forever linked. We're talking to Blair. Yeah, we're talking to Blair Kirkhoff. He is up at training camp. We just give away great barbecue from Joe's Kansas City Barbecue. Go get you some tonight. Joe'sKC.com if you want to order online. 47th and Mission, 119th and Strangline, and 117th and Row, right here by the Hen House that I'm at 119th. This is my local Joe's, my home Joe's, 117th and Row. Incredibly efficient, great, great barbecue, best tasting barbecue around. It's at Joe's Kansas City Barbecue. And remember, you can send it anywhere in the country. Just use joeskc.com to do it. Blair, I did want to get your thoughts on the Royals trade. You okay, Blair?
Yeah, I'm just trying to think of what so Benintendi, he would have traveled with the Royals, I guess,
yes.
Last night, right?
I guess. You know, we're already going there. Stay on the plane. That I didn't even think about that. That would be kind of an awkward flight, would it not?
And it had to be known, right? It was announced after the Yankees game, and I imagine that's why it wasn't announced until then. The Royals must have known it. I wonder if they told Benintendi before he got on the plane. I don't know. I thought about that when I saw it happening, and then realized the Royals were going to New York.
They made him sit in the jump seat, you know. Thing that pops off the wall. Sorry, Benny, you're in the jump seat tonight.
Damn it.
And he hit leadoff today? Is that right tonight?
Yep.
Yeah, that is – how many times has that happened, that you trade a guy, you know, in his next game he's playing you, right?
Right. Like, well, didn't somebody get traded between games of a doubleheader?
1979, Tom Pocat was traded for George Scott in the middle of a doubleheader at Kauffman Stadium.
Good Lord. That is wild.
Clubhouses.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know,
across the hall.
I want to correct something because I've run the numbers. Like, we ran them a while ago about the Royals and how they were playing better ball, but it's against lesser teams, you know, that they're really just beating up on lesser teams, which we've talked about. That's what playoff teams do. You beat up on lesser teams, and then you play 500 ball against teams with winning records. We just ran the numbers. Since starting 17-37, the Royals have played 500 ball. They've done it by going 9-10 against teams that are 500 or better. So that's almost 500. And they were above. Yeah. Well, no, that's the last two games have been to losing teams. And 13-12 against teams below 500. So, they are playing better baseball. I mean, like, that's the, you know, I really thought it was like, because at one point those numbers were like they were 2-7 against teams with winning records. And maybe some of that has changed because a team that was listed over on the sub 500 is, you know, was one or two below, has now won its way above 500, and so that's now making the numbers a little bit different. You know, that's one of the things I'd have to look at. Did somebody just creep above or below that's shifted that around?
Yeah.
But you know what, no matter what those teams are right now, since starting 17-37, they have played 500 baseball, and they've gone 9-10 against teams above 500 and 13-12 against teams below 500. I mean, I think that's, you know, that is a sign that this club, after a bad start, is playing better baseball.
And doing it with the players you want to see play.
Yes, yes. And now with the Benintendi trade, you're going to see even more of the guys that figure to be the future. And for me, I looked up the guys, you know, on one of them on my prospect handbook. One of the guys is 25th on the Yankees. None of the others were ranked, but you dig a little bit deeper, and the kid from Mizzou was 15th in their prospects 2 years ago before he got hurt. And he's certainly putting up big numbers. Now it's time for him to bump up, and I think the Royals may bump all three of them up a level. And I think the Yankees may have been, you know, kind of sandbagging them and bloating the numbers by leaving them below where they needed to be. But they're getting it done. At least two of the three are really getting it done at those levels. And so I don't think people realize guys that don't hit the ball over the wall, there's not a big market for. So I actually think this is a really good trade for the Royals to get what they got. We'd all love to see the number one prospect off some team get traded over to the Royals. And let's be honest, at some point they need to do something like that, right? They need to have a trade like that. But at least right now, you know, what they got, the return is pretty damn good, and it's what they needed. They need arms that throw strikes.
Yeah, it seems to be. I'll be curious about a couple things. I wonder if Benintendi will change his swing, tempted by, you know, the distances in Yankee Stadium, and try to just try to have a little more pop in his bat, just pull pop in his bat. And the other thing I wondered is this seems to me, just at first glance, about the best the Royals could have hoped to do with this trade. You know, three arms that, you know, and all of which are, you know, show some signs of hope that you could get, you know, get major leaguers and effective major leaguers out of it. The ages of them are about where you know what you might expect, and you know the Royals were not going to get somebody, you know, number one or two or three prospect out of this, right? They just weren't. Not for Benintendi, not for, you know, he's an all-star, but he's not a superstar. So I think the Royals did about as well as they could do with this deal. And the other thing, you know, you were talking about the records over the last, the 500 record since 17-37. Check out their record, and I don't think this has changed much, their record against the AL Central versus everybody else. And, you know, that's, of course, has a lot of mediocre teams in the AL Central. But, you know, it seems like there have been some, you know, some of these recent years where they've just been abysmal in their own division and either had a good record in interleague play or against another division. But this year it seems like they held their own in the division, and it's against everyone else where they've, from a season-long perspective, not just the last couple of months.
Yeah, I mean, do you feel it? I mean, listen, I feel it a lot when Brady Singer's striking out 12. Like, that makes me feel good. Like, he's one of the key components. Him, Daniel Lynch, Bubich, Coar, Bolin. And Bolin's started throwing again, and he's throwing well. Then the top three guys from last year's draft who were walking way too many guys, and Asa Lacy, these are the big – and probably Alec Marsh, who was on track to get to the big leagues as well. Those are the kind of the guys you're tracking, and there for a while none of them were really doing well, and now with Singer emerging, like if he can, you know, come back out and have another game, and you can start to be like, all right, we got a guy we can hang our hat on, you know, get Lynch healthy and back out there, you know, Bubich had a nice performance last time, then you that's when you can start to squint and see it.
Yes, and this is kind of how baseball's supposed to work, right? When you've lost 100 plus for a couple of seasons, and you get the draft picks, and you've got commodities now, and you better hope you've got the right scouting and development to make it all work. And so we're seeing we're seeing some of the progress. And I know there's an easy answer to this. I know there's the everybody had to play by the same rules, but I still want to, you know, when it comes to Royals, maybe no other team was impacted by the COVID year as much as they were, having to depend on so many young players and develop, you know, players in development for their future. And so while we all thought that 2022 was, you know, was going to be a real step forward based on the 74 wins of last year, and it doesn't look like it's going to be that way, maybe this is where we do take into account the lost year of development at, you know, at the ballpark at KCK. And it may be because of the number of young players that affected the Royals differently than other ball clubs. So I'm not trying to make excuses. I'm just trying to understand how they fell behind in their progress. But it does, for me anyway, it does put pressure on to see the improvement of players like Singer, and to see what Bobby Witt's about and Melendez. It puts pressure on them for next year. I think there's absolutely have to take big step next year and be much better than. And it happens, right? Look at what the Orioles are doing this year. The Orioles were 52-110 a year ago, and last I looked, they were right at 500. So this stuff happens in baseball. You make the right moves, it can happen. I'm waiting for it to happen here.
Well, and they'll have a lot of payroll flexibility as well, where they can supplement the ball club. I do think that there needs to be some progress this year. I don't think the next 70 games can just be, you know, all the pitching struggling, and we're going to hope that in one off season it all gets figured out. I think progress has to be shown, and it is. And by the way, Brady Singer is progress being shown. Chris Bubich's performance is progress being shown. But it has to continue, right? It can't be. You know, the Royals have kind of been burnt a couple of times, I think, with Dayton Moore and J.J. Piccolo, both vociferously defending Cal Eldred. And they'll say something like, well, if you're going to get on Cal Eldred for so-and-so struggles, you got to credit him for Brad Keller. Keller's up and down all over the place. And it's like, well, if you're going to get on him for one of the – I can't remember which one pointed to Keller, and then the other one pointed to Lynch. And then, you know, then Lynch has bad – like. That's the problem. There isn't that finished product to point to. And here's so I think they've got to have some more success. And it's entirely possible to have it. I will say this. Right now, I don't think there's any momentum from the organization to make a change. I think they're going to get next year, right? Like, I don't think there's going to be a change. I would have told you that maybe the whole Toronto thing could have upset the apple cart, because when you can't point to success on the field, none of your minor league teams are winning, and then you've got what is, you know, call it either frustrating or embarrassing situation with 10 players not going to Toronto. You know, I think, you know, what are you selling to the ownership to, like, keep going? I really thought that might be a spot where, they could make some changes. This could be coming. And I think they're going to have to make changes on the pitching side. I think there will be changes. And if there are, then I think this group will still be there moving forward. But I also felt like after Toronto that, like, okay, Dayton Moore made it clear he was not happy, right? Like, more so than I've ever heard him. You know, he is always about supporting and, you know, for lack of a better term, loving up the players in this organization at every possible turn. And I think his whole front office staff is. There was clearly frustration. He made it clear that he was frustrated. You talk to people away from the microphones and the cameras, they were clearly frustrated. I heard J.J. Piccolo say today, you know, I asked him, I said, well, you know, thinking ahead to, like, maybe future trades, I said, you know, do you need, like, when, you know, because he said, look, we thought we were going to be further along this year. Hasn't gone the way we thought it would. And I said, well, based on that, I mean, do you look at it and say, you know, we have to reset what's going on in that clubhouse? Like, and I didn't want to – what I was getting at was, like, well, yeah, you got all these buddies. That's great. Everybody's sitting around singing Kumbaya, but there's losing.
and people are going to lose jobs because of it, and owners are losing money because of it. Like, you're too comfortable. Like, that's great that everybody gets along. You know, he's like, he goes, nah. And his answer was, I, do you have to kind of maybe think about resetting the clubhouse? And he said, no, I've been in the clubhouse and I've talked to the guys, and you know, it's really a good environment. He said, it's back to the way it was. Or it's back to normal. I can't remember how he phrased it, but it was something to that effect. And Curtis, do we have that? Do we have that cut? Right. Well, it's a bigger one. We're gonna play it later. But anyway, we'll play it later. But he said something to the effect of like it's back to normal. And I'm like, but normal was 20 games below 500, right? Like I get it that maybe there was friction. And, you know, everybody pointed to Nicky Lopez saying it was an unselfish win, and that was Nicky Lopez calling out the guys that weren't there. And he backpedaled from that and so on and so forth. But like the idea that, it's back to the way it was. Well, that's no, like that was the thing that kind of I heard. And I'm like, that's not good enough to be back to the way it was. It needs to be better than that. And I do think every now and then, like when a team is underperforming, and I think this organization clearly thought this was going to be a 500-ish or a little better season. And when they're not, somebody needs to pay the price. Right. And even if you just make some changes to be like, you know, I see the seven of you on the charter yuckety yucking it up all the way there. You know, I'm not saying everybody has to, you know, beat up the toilet every time you lose a game or something. But like it to me, I think you got to change a little bit of that chemistry in that clubhouse. And it's why I really thought now after his comment today, I'm not as sold on it, but I really thought there was no way Whit Merrifield would be a Royal on August 3rd. And when I heard him say today, no, the chemistry's back, I was kind of like, I don't know, because I'd be moving some of them guys in there. And it's not just the 10 guys that didn't go to Toronto. It's that whole clubhouse. Some guys that have to go. I need to freshen up the blood in here. We need some new dynamics because this group may be a bunch of swell guys, but they're not winning. Like, do you think it needs that kind of jump start?
Yeah, and I think it's going to happen. I think it's going to happen a combination of naturally and with some moves that the Royals generate, because Benintendi is out, Santana is gone. I wouldn't be surprised at all if Whit Merrifield was dealt here. So you're talking about guys that have been in the clubhouse for a couple of years and are veteran players. I think when it's all said and done, Salvador Perez will continue to be a Royal, and maybe Hunter Dozier, with his contract, I don't know what the future for him is, but I think just the you just look around this team, and one of the reasons I continue to tune in every single night is because I really like to see Vinny Pasquantino take his cuts, and I want to see Melendez go opposite field with a 400-foot home run. That prospect is there every time he comes to the plate. And Nick Prado, he's hitting better than I thought he was going to hit at the major league level, and Rivera at third, and Bobby Witt, until he got hurt. I think this is going to these are the players that are going to shape the future of the Royals clubhouse, and they all lived through this Toronto thing, they will have experienced it, learned from it, saw the reaction and heard the reaction when Whit Merrifield came to bat for the first time when he came back, and heard the boos. And I think that all of that part of the experience for the young, this core of young players that I think will be the foundation for the future. And you said something last week I thought was really interesting, and maybe it was a couple weeks ago. And it, we all love Baseball Reference, right? It's a great tool. And one of the great tools is you go to it any year, right, any season, and you see the top 12 players in terms of WAR, wins above replacement. Mm-hmm. And, this Royals team, when they were terrible, maybe before they've had their stretch of winning here, they didn't look like the team that we thought, this team was going to be, which was the 2013 Royals, in terms of players right. And their – wins above replacement. They look more like a team from a couple years earlier than that, which, when you said that, I went and looked and I thought, oh my gosh, you're right. And I have to add two more years onto my expectations for this. But I don't know. I'm putting a little too much into these young guys, but I am encouraged by what I see with them and hopeful that that's going to be the nucleus of a team that shows a lot of progress next season.
Yeah.
No doubt. We're talking to the great Blair Kirkhoff from the Kansas City Star. He's brought to you by the University of Kansas Health System, where you can be seen by the same experts that treat the Royals. You can walk right in without an appointment right now. 435 and Knoll is where their walk-in clinic is. Breaks, strains, sprains. If you need to see a doctor right now, see him quick right now. You don't have to wait around, wait weeks or months for an appointment. Get in today at 435 and Knoll. You can walk right in as we speak. We're at Hen House, where you can walk right in and get the best beef anywhere around. Fresh T-bone steaks. I'm talking about certified Hereford beef, $9.99 a pound. The porterhouse steaks, $10.99 a pound. Or go big. Go with the filet mignon. Boneless filet mignon, $18.99 a pound. I know Blair will be here. He always checks the filet mignon special. It's at Hen House. Find the one closest to you at henhouse.com. All right, welcome back. You're in the program here on Sports Radio 810 WHB, talking to Blair Kirkhoff here in the program. Big day. Chiefs getting Carlos Dunlap. Royals getting a deal done for Andrew Benintendi. Real quick, on the college football side of things, Blair, do you buy the Big Ten? Like, do you appreciate what the Big Ten commissioner was saying about, you know, well, we might expand, we might not expand. We're open, but we're going to do what's best for us. Like, what did you take from his comments at Big Ten Media Day?
Yeah, because everything now gets measured by what you compare the Big Ten with the SEC. And I thought he was a little more open in his comments to the idea of expansion than Greg Sankey was at SEC Media Day, where he just said, we're good at 16, now we're going to be flexible, but we're good where we are. Meaning there just didn't seem to be an obvious candidate out of there and for the SEC. But when you look at the Big Ten, it makes some sense if they were attracted to Washington and Oregon specifically, just to, if nothing else, to help the LA schools with their scheduling and not having to make cross country trips. So those are the two. But you ask yourselves why hasn't it happened yet, or why didn't it happen now? When it could happen, nobody knows, but I did find that Kevin Warren seemed to be a little more open to the idea of expansion, and maybe this time they make the first move. They've made it before. They were the ones that shook things up originally with the, Nebraska, Rutgers, and then Maryland, and that started the where we are today started because the Big Ten expanded back in, what was that, in 13 years ago.
We're talking to Blair Kirkhoff here in the program. We're all waiting on Notre Dame to make up their mind.
I got a text of a tweet
that somebody was saying, Peter Burns at ESPN, let me make sure who is this guy? No, never mind. I was going to quote a guy, but the 19 followers makes me think that probably not. probably not the defining voice that I need to be quoting. I was like, oh, that's interesting, but not going to get repeated on the radio. So never mind that. I do think it's interesting how everybody's hand is in the air, and we're all waiting on Notre Dame again. Like the ACC, I just laugh at the ACC. I watch Notre Dame, the Big East dance around and let them play basketball, and this puppy dog look on their face, like, you're going to choose us one day, and you're going to save our conference, and we're going to be good at football. And now the ACC is sitting there just dangling in the wind while everybody knows the Big Ten's going, come on, you want it or not? And there's literally nothing the ACC can do, right, but sit and watch Notre Dame.
That's right. I did like the suggestion. I think this was last week sometime during SEC days when it was put out there that, Notre Dame would be interested, really interested in remaining independent if it could get a big deal from NBC, right? A $75 million a year deal from NBC. And then NBC would flank those games with Big 12 properties, and NBC would get into the Big 12 world. So that was a story that got my attention last week. That it's for NBC programming on Saturdays to be competitive with Fox and ESPN, why not do a Notre Dame Big 12 Game of the Week combo? You could have it on before Notre Dame game or after a Notre Dame game. So that's something to keep in the file away. And if conferences are going to their negotiating windows, which the Pac-12 is right now, and the Big Ten's looking, you know, they're obviously in business because of the UCLA and USC grabs. Notre Dame also looking at a new TV deal as well. If they can get what they want out of NBC. I've heard the NBC wants to be a player, a bigger player in college football, and this may be a way to do it.
Which I still am, I still don't get how they dropped NBC Sports Network, right? Like, they're going to stream sports on Peacock. Okay, and maybe that's the thing. It's like, listen, you don't need it. I just don't know. I don't understand how they, like, now, because, like, I got to hunt for NASCAR every Sunday. Like, what is it? Yeah. Is it 252 or is it 24? Like, I got to find it on USA, and I don't know where the hell USA is. And, I mean, I'll learn it. I'm learning it. It's either 242 or 252 on DirecTV. But, I mean, it is interesting to me on how, why they got away from that channel, but yet now they want to go add more sports. Well, it seems like that channel would have helped you carry more sports, wouldn't it?
Yes, absolutely. I had the same problem with the Olympic coverage last summer. And from Tokyo, what they were using four or five different outlets, and I kind of never knew where to go or what to do. And sometimes the action would be on one channel, but there wouldn't be regular programming on another. And
that boggled my mind. Like okay, I guess whatever MSNBC has is. Wasn't it CNBC and MSNBC they were running it on?
Yeah,
like,
I
guess that's not important because we're showing rowing on there now.
Right. Exactly.
I mean,
exactly.
Like if you're some news junkie or a politics junkie, whatever those channels carry, one of them's news and one of them's politics or one of them's funny. I don't know, whatever the hell they are. They're up in a zone that I don't get to. But I mean, I'm just saying, aren't you pretty much telling your normal listeners, yeah, by the way, you're crap. But we got rowing. Here's ping pong. Like if you had your sports network, then I don't know. We'll see. They're much smarter than us, Blair, because they make bigger checks.
They are. No doubt.
Yeah. Blair, you're the man. Great stuff. We appreciate it. We'll talk again next week.
Okay. Sounds good, Trent.
All right, Blair Kirkhoff from the Kansas City Star with us live from training camp. We'll take a break. We're going to hear from J.J. Piccolo for one, his press conference today as part of our Need to Know.
All right, since 1995, how many series have the Royals won at Yankee Stadium? Brought to you by Good Sense.